British Sky Broadcasting, in association with 20th Century Fox, presents a Darrell F. Zunuck film, Boomerang, starring Dana Andrews, Jane Wyatt, Lee J. Cobb, Cara Williams, Arthur Kennedy, Sam Levine, Taylor Holmes, Robert Keith, and Ed Begley. The screenplay is by Richard Murphy and based on an article by Anthony Abbott published in the Reader's Digest, December 1945. The director is Elia Kazan, and the audio description is written and voiced by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. A caption says, "The story you are about to witness is based on fact. In the interests of authenticity, all scenes, both interior and exterior, have been photographed in the original locale, and as many actual characters as possible has been used. Street scenes."
Some wag once remarked that after New York, it's all Connecticut. The intent was humorous, but like many sarcasms, it contained the germ of truth. For the small cities which make up the backbone of the nation are all in the same pattern. That's why it doesn't really make much difference that we have brought you to this town in Connecticut. The basic facts of our story actually occurred in a Connecticut community much like this one. But they could have happened anywhere. In Oregon or Mississippi, Georgia or Utah. You may have other names for your streets, but whether you call them Center Street, North Street or Main Street, they're not much different from these. And the people, well, maybe they dress a little differently or talk a little differently here, but underneath, they're the same as your next-door neighbor, and you probably know them all. The cop on the beat, the kid selling papers, shopkeepers, lawyers, good people, bad people. And if your town is lucky, you may have a minister who is as familiar to you as Father Lambert was to this town, a man known and loved by all. You might find him almost any evening on Main Street taking his constitutional after supper. A cheerful, kindly figure with a friendly word for everyone.
Oh, good evening, Father.
To give me a match, will you?
Sure. There you are.
Good night. The priest wraps his pipe on a lamppost. He opens his tobacco pouch and smiles at a passing girl.
Hello, Father.
Hello, my dear.
A gun is pointed at his head. People nearby hear the shot and stare. A man in a light trilby hat, with his dark coat collar drawn up, walks away from the body. As a passerby crosses the road to investigate, the killer starts to run.
Stop that man! Hey, stop that man! Stop him! Grab him! Grab him!
Is he dead?
Why, it's poor old Father Lambert.
Somebody better do something!
Why, just try him!
I seen the whole thing. I was standing over there.
Yeah, so did I.
I seen the whole thing. We better get the cops. Where's the nearest phone?
There's one over at the drugstore.
Well, go, somebody.
I'll go.
Put down that pipe. Don't touch a thing.
That's right.
Nobody touch anything until the cops come.
The gunman continues to run towards a railway bridge. A train passes above. 1940s vintage cars drive on the road below.
It seems incredible, but in your town and my town, these things actually happen. Life is pleasant and a little dull, and night after night, we yawn, flick off the radio, and go to bed. Then one morning, black headlines stare at us. A war is declared. The stock market crashes. Or a kindly old man is shot down on the street. And the quiet pool of community life is suddenly stirred up. Its waters boil, and its quiet currents twist in new and devious ways.
I can't believe it.
No one in town can.
That's right, no one does.
Extra paper!
People flock into a brick-built church. The name on a board outside, the Reverend George A. Lambert. With a wreath of fresh flowers, five lads stride to the house next to the church.
You better do this, George.
No, go on.
We took a boat right in. Well, here.
He did us favors from time to time.
Put it up close, will you, ma'am?
Thank you, boys. Thank you.
In the church.
More than any man I have ever known, he gave his life completely to the service and to the welfare of others. He was simple and unassuming, yet we who knew him felt he wore the mantle of greatness. We will miss him.
The minister stares down emotionally at a book with Lambert's name on it.
Yes, the death of a man like Father Lambert leaves a gap in any community. For unfortunately, there are too few like him. The old minister spent most of his life here, quietly building up his parish, sharing the simple life of his neighborhood, and somehow imbuing his parishioners with some of his own kindliness and humanity. Maybe he was luckier than most pastors, for late in life a reform government took over the city, ousting the machine politicians and bringing fresh impetus to city planning. To such projects as parks, playgrounds, and recreational centers, the old man gladly contributed his own wisdom and experience, and the dignity and weight of his church.
Mr. Harris has kindly pointed out this section.
I merely mentioned its accessibility and the fact that the bank may be able to arrange for its purchase.
Father Lambert?
Looks like an excellent site. I find bankers always seem to know these things. Of course, Mrs. Harvey, as chairman, will have the final say.
Well, I think it's just fine. It's wonderful. I don't...
But his everyday work was with the people of his parish, and especially with those who sought his advice and counsel. Since he was a man of God, his labors sometimes led him into the strange and secret places of men's souls. He was just and forgiving, but he was also a man, and a stern and uncompromising judge of character.
Stop that. Even if I wanted to forgive you, I couldn't. It's out of my hands. Jim, you're a sick man.
But Father, I...
We've been through it all before. I can't help you. A sanitarium, perhaps?
No, or... I won't. If people
it's
would just...
It's not people, son. It's you. I've told you that before. This time, fortunately, no great harm has been done. But the next time... No, I can't let you go any longer. It's got to be a sanitarium. Have you spoken to your mother about this?
You wouldn't tell her.
I haven't spoken to anyone.
What about Father Gardner?
Oh, Jim, you're starting all over again. This is just between the two of us. I prefer that you make up your own mind, son. But if you can't, I won't wait long. For your own sake, I can't wait long.
Jim, tall and balding with a hooked nose, slowly turns to Father Lambert, shaking his head in desperation. The white-haired priest watches him leave and reaches for a notepad on which he writes.
Services will be held Tuesday at 11. The body will lie in state in the church.
The Morning Record newspaper reports that 7 witnesses have described the killer: dark coat, light hat, medium build. It reports that a .32 caliber weapon was used.
Succession. In the honorable office of a priest, grant we beseech ye that he may also be joined with them in a perpetual fellowship through Jesus Christ our Lord, who with thee and the Holy Ghost livest ever one God, world without end. Amen. Grant, we beseech thee, O Lord, that the soul of thy servant, the priest George, whom while dwelling in this world thou didst adorn with holy gifts, may ever rejoice with glory in the heavenly mansions.
A detective watches as Jim, the man with a hooked nose, kneels at the priest's coffin and blesses himself before leaving. The cop leans in to a witness.
Forgive their sins.
Well, for a moment I thought it was him.
The detective ponders and nervously steps towards his chief, a well-built man with a grim expression and wavy hair.
The man thought it was him, but no luck.
What'd you expect?
It's a chance, chief.
So's going over Niagara Falls in a barrel. Let's get out of here.
They leave, followed by 2 uniformed officers.
Don't anybody know anything about this case?
Oh, come on, Dugan. It's been 5 days.
Four.
Now. Okay, 4 days. And you mallet heads haven't even turned up as much as a footprint. People ain't gonna like that, Dugan.
Oh, why don't you get lost?
And have you jokers tried to find me? Are you kidding?
Police Department, Sergeant Dugan.
Oh, I
know. No, lady, no. The city pound takes care of that.
Lost a husband, huh?
Oh, quiet. Hi, Lieutenant. What's the story?
Look, Dave, this is a tough case.
No,
I don't want to
tell me your trouble.
All right, but I am telling you the chief doesn't like those stories of yours.
He's going to get a chance not to like a lot more of them if you guys don't...
Well?
Nothing, chief.
Mr. Harvey called about 4 times. He says for you to come over right away, as soon as you get in.
Got an angle, chief?
No.
Mr. Harvey seems awful anxious, chief. Maybe there's a break in the story, huh?
Paper, paper.
Did you ever clean this place out?
Laughing boy.
Police are still babbled at murder.
Paper, Chief?
No.
Outside, a sergeant glances at the newspaper.
Take it.
The sergeant hands it back to the paper boy. The police chief strides into an office. The name on the door, Henry L. Harvey, state's attorney. A woman sits at an outer desk.
How do you do, Miss...
Go right in. He's been expecting you.
Smoking a cigar, the chief enters the inner office.
Yeah, but I tell you, they're doing all they can. No, I haven't heard anything since the last time I talked to you. Certainly, I'm going to talk to Robinson. Oh, here he is now. Hello, Robbie. I'll call you back later. Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't look so happy, Robbie. Anything break yet?
You too?
It's a bad case.
Well, it's not going to get any better with everybody yapping at me.
Look, Robbie.
No, nothing's broken. No leads, no clues, no nothing.
We've got to get him. This is not a pool room shooting, it's a murder.
Mr. Harvey, I was a rookie patrolman on this beat when Father Lambert first came to town. I want to get that guy, too.
Sorry, Robbie. I should have known better.
Forget it.
Only we're in trouble, Robbie. Did you see the record this morning?
Yeah.
I don't like the tone of it. They're going to make a political issue out of this.
They're just blowing their tops.
Not this time. We're in a tough spot, Robbie.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Burst into tears? I got every available man working. If we get him, we get him. If we don't, we don't. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll get back to work. Let your friends over at City Hall worry about it. They're the ones they're after, not you and me.
They're already after me, Robbie. And they're already after you.
Robbie nods and leaves. A newspaper delivery lorry stops. A billboard says, Citizens Committee demands action.
Mr. Mayor, we are ready to give our cooperation in any way that you can use.
I know that you and your committee ought to be congratulated for your show of civic spirit,
Mr. Mayor,
Bob,
you've got to do something. This can't go on.
He's right.
That's right. Get him.
No clues, for crying out loud. Seven people seen them, didn't they?
Yeah, but
don't tell me there ain't something phony about this. I know three guys in City Hall. Great guys when the going's good. Just let them try to get my vote, that's all.
Say, are you going to get a shave or are you running for the police commissioner?
It's 9 o'clock and news time. And as we do every morning, we now bring you the voice of the Morning Record. This morning's editorial tells us that the police are still at sea in the Lambert case. 10 days have passed since this brutal murder, and still no suspect has been found. Just how long the citizens of this city will stand for this state of affairs is a matter for public indignation.
A wiry-haired newsman types furiously.
Well, I see the police continuing their grand and glorious chase. Goes round and round like a merry-go-round, and gets just about as far.
Well, it ain't funny, Riley. These boys are civil service the same as you and me. They're not getting any place.
Well, I should think they could grab somebody.
Well, where would you look, Jack?
I don't know.
Well, then shut up.
The firemen abandon their card game and rush to the fire engine. Women in a tenement block chat over their balconies.
Rachel! You see by the papers this morning?
Yeah, they picked up a fellow on Center Street.
They don't know who they are picking up. The next thing you know, they'll be picking you up. Mrs. Jones, does your Tom know anything about this case?
Well, Tom says they're working on a new angle. Tom says they think the fellow must have known Father Lambert pretty well.
Oh, go on. The police couldn't pick up a pig in an alley.
Maybe you ladies think it's funny to insult the police force. But the next time you want my Tom for anything, I'll remember this.
The offices of the Morning Record, T.M. Wade, owner and publisher, it says on the door. Inside, they study a derogatory cartoon about the police. The caption says, the blind leading the blind.
Great, man, great. Another week of this and we can write our own tickets.
Dave, I might even give you a bonus.
I got it.
I passed City Hall on the way over. They're running around like chickens with their heads cut off.
What would your boys be doing if they were in?
Running around like chickens with their heads cut off? Why, Mac?
Well, I don't know. There's not much you can do in a case like this.
So what?
Well, it's a little like kicking them when they're down.
What's the matter with you, McDonald? Don't you like your job?
Well... Sure.
And save your editorial comment for the paper.
Now, look, Mr. Wade...
Take it easy, girls. Take it easy. Let's not make an international incident out of this. It's the same in all these towns. Somebody's in, somebody's out. Now, let's get back to that bonus if you haven't forgotten about it.
Let's get back to running a newspaper.
I need a new lead, Dave.
Okay, what's the angle this time?
I like that stuff of yours about amateur politicians, Dave.
Which party are you talking about? Are they still wearing stick pins?
Yeah.
The wiry-haired reporter, Dave Woods, prods his boss's tie. Then, in a trilby, he pounds away at his typewriter. A cub reporter eyes him and then wanders over.
Hey, Dave. When are you going to take me out on a story with you?
Go away, I'm busy.
Police commissioner, amateur golfer, too. Hey, do you think he'll like that, Dave?
He'll love it. He'll probably come looking for me with a golf club.
Oh.
Or what?
I don't know.
I hope you're saving your money, Bill.
Bill stares back in puzzlement as he leaves. Dave holds his head in frustration. Next, another derogatory cartoon in the Morning Record about the police and the governing politicians from the Reform Party. It shows blundering Sherlock Holmes with magnifying glasses. Harvey's wife is reading the paper as he arrives home.
Is that you, dear?
Uh-huh.
The attorney wearily brushes his face with his hands. He crosses into the sitting room and hugs his wife.
How are you, hon?
Fine. Anything new?
Nothing special.
She glances once more at the paper before discarding it.
Well, what's new in the Lambert case?
Oh, it's coming along, I guess.
Not much breaking, though.
No, not much.
Well, of course, with all these amateurs trying...
Amateurs. Now, listen, Ray, don't you start... Pretty smart, aren't you? I thought we weren't taking the record.
I read the cooks. Anyway, it's on the radio.
Yeah, I know. They're really pouring it on us, aren't they?
Seriously, though, Henry, such a brutal thing. Can't they find anything at all?
No. No, but in a case like this, we might get a break any time.
Really?
I don't know. I heard a fella say it.
Oh.
Go on, let's forget it. Go on, tell me more about your recreation center.
Well, it's really coming along wonderfully. Paul Harris has the land all lined up. It's all up a piece from some real estate agent or other. And I think we're even going to be able to put in a pool.
Well, you can't ever say again you haven't any kids to fool with. You'll have hundreds hanging around. Oh, I'm sorry, hon. I don't know what made me say that. I guess I'm just... Forgive me.
She kisses him as she sits on his lap with a drink in her hand.
I've already forgotten it. I didn't ask anyone.
It's the mayor, ma'am, and some other gentlemen.
Ask them to come in.
Yes, ma'am.
Will you come in, please?
Come right in, Mr. Mayor.
Hello, ma'am. Nice to see you.
Hello there.
Hello, ma'am.
This is nice.
Thank you.
Hello, ma'am.
Sorry to disturb you.
Oh, not at all. You make yourselves at home.
Thank you.
She gives her husband a special look and disappears. Three politicians sit. One stands and lights a cigarette.
Well, I'd hate to be selling the record here.
It's not funny, Henry. We're trying our best to give the city a decent government, and Wade is making us look like a pack of fools. Isn't that right, Mike?
You didn't expect him just to pull out, did you? This is politics.
All I know is my office is full of committees on this and committees on that all day. I didn't run a real estate office like that, and I can't run a city. Can I, Mac?
What about me? You think I like a lot of reporters trying to grab me every time I stick my head out of the office?
I wish you'd stick your head out just once. There's something besides no clues.
Now, just a
no
minute.
Clues.
My boys
no
are doing
clues.
Everything
Sit down, Tom. Keep on fighting among yourselves. You'll have every department in the city at each other's throats. Wade would like that.
Let's get down to cases.
Henry, Mac and I have decided this thing is too big for us. We need help. The FBI or...
The FBI?
Yes.
What's the matter with our own police?
What's the matter with them? They're floundering, that's all.
Well, you can't call in the FBI. This is not a federal case. And we don't even know who the murderer is.
Well, we've got to do something.
Look, we've got a good police force. One of the best in the country. Why don't you back them up instead of yelling for help?
That's what I say.
I don't know if you've given this any consideration, Henry. But the election depends on this case.
Well, Mac... We promised them a decent government. If we can't give it to them, we might as well...
It's a matter of the police chasing their tail.
I resent that.
I don't care whether you do or not. And as for this prattle about backing up our boys...
You're making a lot of fuss for a commissioner of public works.
Henry, I don't think you ought to say that. Stop it. You sound like a bunch of schoolgirls. What's your idea, Henry? Suppose our boys can't crack it. Then what do?
Well, Mac, if they don't, I don't see how anyone else can. It's that kind of a case. So why don't we give him a fighting chance and back him up the best way we can?
I think he's right.
I don't
know.
No, Henry is closer to this case than any of us. Mac, you told me not over an hour ago.
I've changed my mind. I respect Henry's judgment.
What about 2 weeks, Henry? You think that's fair?
And then what?
Then we'll call in somebody else.
I don't know who, but somebody. Right?
Well, beer, gentlemen.
If this thing falls through, I'm holding you personally responsible, Henry.
You're holding me.
Beer, gentlemen.
The next edition of the Morning Record appears with a headline suggesting the police department is under fire from the State House. The article highlights the feeble efforts of the police.
I don't care how you do it, Robinson, but you've got to get more action. Put more men on. Get the state police. Get anybody. But we've got to get to the bottom of this thing fast. Is that clear?
Yeah, that's clear.
With a grim face, the police commissioner shuts his door on the local police chief, Robbie. Later, Harvey calls in on Robbie, who is fiddling with key rings.
I was hoping I'd catch you, Robbie. I want to talk to you. I saw the mayor...
You don't want to talk to me. The Lambert case talked to White.
Why did I talk to White?
He's taken over. I quit.
What's the matter, Robbie?
He's able to work one of these things.
Come on, Robbie. What's the matter?
Matter? Nothing. Nothing. Except it's turning into a political three-ring circus, and I'm no politician, I'm a cop. Cop with a case that has no leads, no angles. Newspapers want action, okay, let them get another boy. Me, I'm through.
The newspapers are chasing us all. I told you that 2 weeks ago. But they've been taking pot shots at you for 20 years.
Not with country club presidents chew me out every 20 minutes of heaven. Thomas Benson James.
You're not quitting, Robbie.
I'm not? Who's going to stop me?
You are. You're out of your head. No, I'm not. You said it yourself, Robbie. You're a cop. And an honest one. And you're walking out on honest men.
If you're talking about Thomas Benson James.
Yes, him too. Well, they don't know anything about politics much. They're worried and they're excited, but they are trying to help the city.
Well, they can do it without me.
I don't think they can. I was talking to them last night, Robbie, and I told them that if anybody could lick this case, it would be you. I even got them to promise that they'd back you up. Without interference for 2 more weeks.
2 more weeks. Then what? Call in Nick Carter?
Chief.
I'm busy.
I'm sorry, Chief, but what about these?
I'm busy.
What are they?
Newspaper cartoonists. The witnesses all described the guy they saw to him.
What are you going
to
do with him?
I don't know. Circulate him, I guess, and then we'll...
Circulate him, I guess? You've been on the force for 10 years. You've been a detective for 3. You still don't know what to do? Get a composite photo of these and send it to every editor in the East. Excuse me. And get moving.
Yes, sir.
We'll get 4,000 suspects.
Maybe. One of them could be the right one. Hold on. Keep punching, Robbie.
Hey, I want to talk to you.
I thought you'd see it my way, Robbie.
Robbie sees Harvey has solved his keyring puzzle. Men run through a railway goods yard to try to escape the cops.
The chief of police came close to the truth when he talked of the number of suspects that would be picked up. There weren't thousands, of course, but a trickle started which swelled to a steady stream as the manhunt fanned out to include neighboring cities, the state, and finally, all of New England.
Okay, okay, I'll send a car.
The newspapers, especially those like The Record, which were trying to hold the Reform Administration up to ridicule, kept public interest at a fever pitch, until every man who wore a dark coat or a light hat automatically became a suspect. Mounting rewards by angry civic groups added to the incentive, until men were being turned up from every walk of life who bore even the faintest resemblance to the supposed murder.
Okay, yeah. All right.
And actually, there was very little for anyone to go on. The clue of the dark coat and light hat was slim enough, and the nebulous figure conceived in the minds of the 7 witnesses and brought to life by an artist's pen was hardly much more. And it became increasingly apparent that almost as great a problem for the police as the capture of the murderer was to be the overzealousness of the public.
All right, so he came out of a pool room. Who doesn't?
And still the phone rang with ever-increasing frequency at police headquarters. And still the prowl cars doggedly ran down every lead, streaking across the city in search of a furtive figure seen here, another seen there. Something suspicious about their actions, something said, or the mere fact of wearing a dark coat and a light hat.
More suspects are ushered from a police van. The headline in the Morning Record, murderer still at large.
And still men poured into police headquarters. Angry men, indignant men, beaten men, and dazed men. men with long criminal records, and simple men snatched from peaceful pursuits, all to be shoved into the glare of the lineup platform, scrutinized, questioned, and released, in the forlorn hope that one, just one of all these hundreds, might be the man they sought.
In a street, two men wearing dark coats and light hats pass. They stare suspiciously at each other. Then they both run.
Sure, lady, sure. Don't give it a thought. We'll have a prowl car there right away.
Yeah, don't say I never did nothing for you.
But no pie?
Pie yet. What's the score, Dugan?
Score? 8-5 against me. These phones keep ringing like a 3-alarm fire. They're shaking suspects out of their sleeves. More. They even picked up my Uncle Jerry the other night. 64 years old.
Did he do it?
Police Department, Sergeant Dugan. Go ahead, long distance.
I bet the guy who done it is still walking around, very happy.
Yeah, now you're a detective. Hello? Who? Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Ohio. Yeah? Yeah? From here? Yeah! Yeah! Wow! Now listen, Sarge. Hang on to him. Yeah, any charge. And don't say anything to him. Right. I'll call you back in 10 minutes.
What's up?
Go away.
I'm not listening.
Chief, Dugan. Listen, Chief. Ohio State Police say they got a guy that tallies with our circular. Yeah. Only this guy admits he left here 3 days ago and he's packing a .32 revolver. Okay. Right. Extradition.
Thanks, Dugan. Next time you get pie.
All right, now stand up straight, all of you. Keep your heads up.
Come on, get your heads up.
An identity parade. Robbie turns to the seven witnesses.
I want you to look at them again, carefully. I don't want any mistakes about this. You're all sure that's the man. All right, let the rest of them go. That's all. Thank you.
Here's the stuff, Chief.
Book it. Get that gun to a ballistics man.
No chance on that till morning, Chief.
All right, we'll get it there early.
Okay.
Okay, take him away.
Well, how about it, Robbie?
I don't know. We'll have to see.
What do you mean?
I just got a guy, that's all. What do I know about him?
Seven people recognized him.
Okay, seven people recognized him. So what?
If you aren't the bullheadedest old goat.
Just a little more experience, that's all.
Well, take plenty of time.
Robbie watches Harvey leave with a self-satisfied smile. The man picked out by the witnesses sits uncomfortably at a table in a police interrogation cell with a door of steel bars. A uniformed police sergeant enters the cell, followed by a psychiatrist in a dark suit who sits in the background and observes. The sergeant places a clock on the table and takes a seat. The police chief, Robbie, hangs back to brief one of his men, Detective White. White steps towards the suspect.
Now, Waldron, it's going to be a lot easier all around if you just tell us the whole story.
But I don't even know what you're holding me for. Just because I was carrying a gun?
No, it's not the gun.
Then what did you bring me all the way back from Ohio for?
I got a right to travel, ain't I?
Well, what do you want from me?
We're holding you on a murder charge, Waldron.
What?
Sit down. Sit down.
You're crazy. I never murdered anybody.
Robbie enters, sucking on a cigar. White continues.
Seven witnesses identified you as the man who shot Father Lambert on the night of September 29th on Main Street.
You're crazy, I tell you. I'm
down.
Let go.
Cut it out. Take it easy, sons. Sit down. If you didn't do it, we'll find out. If you did do it, we'll find that out, too.
I want a lawyer.
You'll get one later.
Well, let's start from the beginning. You have plenty of time. You have nowhere to go. And you never saw Father Lambert in your life?
No, I never even heard him, though I saw his name in the paper.
You were just passing through town, you were never in the neighborhood, and you never saw him before.
No, I tell you, I...
The suspect, John Waldron, sees a woman in the cell doorway.
Josie, that man before?
Well, yes, I have.
When?
Why, was that week.
Before Father Lambert was killed?
Yes, one afternoon. Did he do it?
We don't know yet, ma'am. Thank you, that's all, ma'am. So you never saw him before, huh?
Oh, that dame is nuts.
No, she isn't.
All right, I saw him. He gave me a lecture and a pamphlet, but that don't
Why
mean that
Why didn't you tell us before?
Well, I don't know. I was afraid.
Afraid of what?
I don't know. I was just afraid.
Afraid of what?
I don't know.
Chief, there's an easier way of doing this.
No.
We're wasting a lot of time.
No.
Okay, you're right, boss. But it'll make it much easier for him in the long run. We're losing a lot of sleep.
Well, maybe he'd give me a line on that job.
Well, did he?
No. He said he didn't know of anything. Then he gave me a lecture and a pamphlet.
Is that what got you sore at him?
No, of course not.
And what did?
Nothing, I tell you. I wasn't sore at him. What are you trying to make me say?
Say he came home from the bowling alley. Get his head up, Murph. Washed up and then had dinner at the White Spot.
At Andy's, I
told you. Then you rode over to Main Street.
I didn't ride over, I walked over.
You walked, then what?
I went to the movies.
The Plaza?
No, yes.
What movie did you say, sir?
Western.
What time did you go in?
7, a little after...
Double feature?
Yes.
What was the other picture?
Murder.
You say you were just passing through town?
Yes, I was just passing.
The fellow at the gas station had made it up and says you were working for him 2 months ago.
What are you trying to do to me?
Why do you keep lying, son?
You know they've got your whole background. They can trip you every time. Besides, you're a dead giveaway. Every time you lie, you put your hand up to your mouth. You can't get away with anything.
You're crazy.
Let's talk about the gun again. You say you bought it just before you left town, huh?
Yes, just before I left town. I was going on the road and...
Along with the cops, the psychiatrist stares intently.
Oh, what's the use?
You bought it a week before the murder. The pawnbroker you bought it from told us that. He had his own statement to prove it.
Exhausted, Waldron slumps down on the cell bunk.
What do we do, Chief?
Get him up. Keep it going.
He's hauled to his feet and dragged back to the table.
Now let's start right from the beginning.
Hey, come on, Dugan, stop stalling.
Dugan, I got a 9 o'clock deadline.
No, it ain't gonna do you guys no good to hang around here. I don't know nothing.
You can say that again. Always picking up some cluck with $2.07 in his pocket. Why don't you ever grab a guy with white piping on his vest, huh?
I don't know.
Mr. Harvey, what about it? What do you think?
Dave, I'm trying to find out myself. See me later.
You know what I think? I think you guys just got desperate and picked up some tramp.
We wouldn't have gone to Ohio for no tramp. We got plenty around here.
Right. And at least one of them in a uniform.
Harvey goes upstairs where the psychiatrist with specs and a neat mustache is drinking coffee with Robbie.
Any luck, Robbie?
No, we've been trying all right. Want to look at this stuff?
No. What do you think?
Pretty hard to say. You know Rensford, don't you?
Oh, yes, you're the alienist, aren't you?
Psychiatrist.
What do you think of him?
Pretty hard to tell. He's under a lot of stress.
Yes, I know. But does he sound like a murderer or not?
Well, he lies, of course, but he's frightened. And he seems to be more than usually bitter and resentful.
Is he bitter and resentful enough to commit murder?
I couldn't say. Just out of the army, that might account for his bitterness a little, the difficulty of readjustment, or possibly...
It's something else. What I want to know, Doctor, is whether he's a homicidal type or not.
Well, I'm afraid I can't answer that. I'm not sure there is such a thing. Haven't you ever... Well, maybe I better not ask that.
Perhaps not. But to get back to a more exact science, what about the gun, Bobby?
I don't know yet. It's pretty early.
Suppose if I went downstairs, I could hurry him up a little bit?
Why don't you do that? Tell him we're waiting for his report. You know where his office is.
Oh, yes.
Hello, Mr. Harvey.
Oh, good morning, wife. Tough night, huh?
You ain't kidding. We're knocking off, Chief. It's a tough nut to crack. Maloney and Heron are with him now.
Boys need a little sleep, huh?
What about you?
I'm all right. Shave's as good as a night's sleep.
Chief.
Hmm?
This young lady claims she has information for you.
Do you mind? I came here of my own free will.
All right, Charlie. Now, Monahan told me about you. Miss, Nelson, isn't it?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Then you went home?
I went home and I took a shower.
Then you had dinner? You had dinner?
I've told you, honey.
Tell us again.
Oh, let me get some.
You had dinner?
I had dinner at Andy's. Then I walked.
Pistol man?
Yeah, that's Tommy.
Yeah, she knows me. Tell him.
Now, the night Father Lambert was shot, shortly before the shooting, this man walked by your restaurant, eh?
Yeah, it was about 7:20. He walked by and waved to me. I remember it because just afterwards
but
I went...
couldn't have. What's the matter with that?
Let it go, Jimmy. A week or so later, he came to you and told you he was leaving town.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny. We'd been going together about a month or so, and then one afternoon he came in and said he was leaving town, just like that. You know, boys just don't do that sort of thing to me.
What about it, Waldron?
What about what? She's lying.
What about leaving town?
I wanted to leave town.
A little sudden, wasn't it?
No, I wasn't working.
I offered to get him a job with me in the cafe.
I didn't get out of the army to start pro-living in a crummy cafe.
Crummy? Ask him how crummy it was. Ask him about all the free meals he had in there. Yeah, I'm glad to get him, too, till he got the wrinkles out of his stomach. Then he thinks he can brush me off.
Get her out of here. Get her out of here.
I'll be all, miss.
If you need any more help, I'll leave my number with the desk sergeant.
Three cops restrain Waldron.
Dirty double-crossing.
You get in all kinds of trouble, don't you?
Robbie pats Waldron on the shoulder and leaves the cell. Dr. Rainsford is in the corridor.
She didn't help his alibi much.
Oh, she didn't. Well, I hate to be in a spot where I had to depend on that little girl's word. Doesn't feel right. Just doesn't feel right.
Hey, Robbie, you got it.
What?
The bullet came from his gun.
That's right, Chief.
Johnson says he'll have the full report for us within an hour.
That does it.
I'll stick right on his neck until he gets it out.
That does it. He'll confess now. Come on, Doc.
What you told us before, you were sick of the black market.
Pick up his head.
You were tired of being pushed around. You were tired of handouts and advice. And you resented the people that had
Larry,
good jobs and money. When you came out of the army, it was nothing. You brooded on that. You brooded over it until you took that gun. You took the gun with the idea of getting
I
even.
Didn't take it.
And when you saw Lambert on the street, you made him the personification of every handout, every word of advice, and in a rage you shot him.
Please let me sleep.
In a minute, isn't that what happened?
No, I went so
Isn't
movies.
That what happened?
No, no, no.
Isn't
no.
that what happened?
All right, all right. Stenographer.
The stenographer types the confession. Waldron's slumped head is lifted from the table. Dr. Rainsford puts a pen in his hand. Barely able to keep awake, Waldron signs the confession. Waldron slumps back and collapses after signing. The portly police chief lifts up the sleeping man and carries him over to the bunk bed where he gently lays him down. Looking reflective, Robbie turns to the sergeant and then lowers his eyes.
What a way to make a living.
A notice on a door says coroner's office.
The case of the people of the state of Connecticut versus John Waldron moved rapidly. Legal procedure in this state calls for a coroner's inquest, the findings of which are submitted to the district court. If the evidence warrants it, the case is bound over to the superior court, where the state's attorney examines the facts and decides whether or not the accused shall be indicted.
You, Mr. Graham Rogers?
Yes, sir.
How much of this murder did you see?
I was closing up my shop. I must have turned around just in time.
You were going away from Father Lambert, Mr. Carey.
I had passed him, but I turned back as the shot was fired.
And you were across the street, Mr. Lukash?
My wife and I was waiting for a bus across the street. We heard a shot.
And Mr. Cartucci, you made an attempt to stop him?
A couple of seconds sooner and I'd have grabbed him. I made a jump for him, but he was just a little too quick.
But I thought you crossed the street immediately, Mrs. Lukash.
We were so shocked, we just stood there for a moment. Then as we started to cross the street toward Father Lambert...
And he passed close to you as he ran, Mr. Callahan.
Why, he practically knocked me over. If I knew why he'd been running, I might have hung on to him.
And you were a little frightened, Miss Nicholson.
I was scared to death. But I saw him run down the street till he disappeared in the shadows.
Then on the basis of your experience in ballistics, Mr. Johnson, and your experiments with this weapon, you would say that this bullet came from this weapon?
I would, positively.
Thank you, sir. That's all. Chief Robinson, please. Bag these exhibits. Chief Robinson, will you certify that this is the confession taken by your man?
I didn't do it, I tell you. They made me sign it.
Save that for the court, young man. Take him out of here.
Detective White grabs Waldron and frog marches him away.
John Waldron is remanded in the custody of the police. The case will be referred to the district court. Proceedings closed. That's all.
Harvey steps over to Robbie.
Well, what do you think?
That's as close to a perfect case as I've ever seen, Robbie.
Thanks. It was as much a surprise to me as anyone else. He had me fooled. Too bad. Kid had a good war record, too.
Oh, that's a shame.
Great, Robbie. We're all proud of you.
Thanks.
I'm going down to see the mayor and the others. They'll be as happy as a bunch of kids.
I wouldn't rub it in too much, Mac.
Oh, no more than they need. I'd push the indictment, Henry. You know, get it going fast.
I'll push it along. I only want a few days to go over all the evidence.
You can talk to the boy?
Who, Waldron? What for?
You might get a line on what he's going to use for defense.
It's an idea. Maybe you're right. Well, that Waldron will be delighted to see me.
A police officer unlocks a gate of bars in the custody block.
Right down there, Mr. Harvey. Cell number 3.
Waldron is sitting in his cell, staring at the floor.
My name's Harvey Waldron. I'm the state's attorney, the man who'll prosecute you.
What do you want?
I thought I'd like to hear your side of it. Might help clear things up.
My side of it? You kidding? My side of it is that I didn't do it.
Well, you know, you did leave town at a funny time.
Waldron gets to his feet and grips the cell bars.
I left town when I wanted to and because I wanted to.
You had a right to do that, but in a situation like this, they have to know why.
I told them why. I wanted a job.
After all, you had jobs here.
That's right. I had jobs here. Gas station, driving trucks.
Well?
Look, mister. I put in 5 years in the Army. 5 years. That puts me 5 years behind the parade. I didn't want to pump gas or hustle trucks. I wanted to get moving. I got a lot of catching up to do.
You have to start somewhere.
You get anxious. You understand? You got to get moving. You can't wait. I'm no kid anymore. And
what were you going to do?
I don't know. I thought I could go someplace, maybe. Start a small business. Make something out of myself. I had an idea once. What's the odds? I missed the boat. Fly high like low. Doesn't make any difference now.
Well, it was your gun.
Yeah, my gun. All them people saw me.
That young lady at the Coney Island Cafe.
Young lady. That dame. Would you take her word against mine?
She said she knew you and saw you pass the window.
Ah, she lies in her teeth. I brushed her off. She's trying to get even with me.
Wait a minute. You did confess.
Sure I confessed. After 2 days in that joint, I'd have confessed anything. What do you want? You want to hear it all over again?
All right.
Out of here. I know what you want. You want to hang me. That's what you want to do. You want to hear me say I killed him? All right. I killed him. Go ahead and hang me. Hang me!
Harvey frowns thoughtfully before leaving.
To all intents and purposes, the capture of John Waldron had silenced the attack on the reform government. But good politicians, like good boxers, never quit till the final count.
This is Mr. O'Shea. He's just been appointed public defender in the Waldron case. He's going to give me an interview, and I'm going to show him how to shoot a game of golf. Delighted to meet you, sir.
Thanks. Sit down, boys. Sit down. I needed some company. Excuse me, Mabel. O'Shea. I know that name.
The League of Women Voters, sir.
Hmm? League? Women Voters. Oh, yes. Out in the Lawnwood District. Well, I'm always glad to meet a good party man.
I try to be, sir.
Harry thinks he can get Waldron off.
Oh,
I'm working on the temporary insanity angle, sir. I think I can make it stick.
It won't work. Pardon my abruptness, but I think that you're on the wrong track. But there is a chance.
Yes?
O'Shea, this boy Waldron is a veteran. They'll never hang an ex-serviceman.
If he killed a man, they will.
Dave. O'Shea, I think we're forgetting something. Everyone is. This boy has served his country. He spent 2 years in the cold and mud on the battlefields of Europe.
The South Pacific.
Well, that's worse. But dig into that war record. Find out every place he's been. What he did. What ribbons he won. Maybe we ought to have him in uniform at the trial.
Oh, that would be nice.
All right, forget that. But dig into that war record.
That's wonderful, Mr. Wade. I sure will.
But get going.
Well, I sure will. And it's been a pleasure meeting you, Mr. Wade.
I know.
I'll meet you out on the tee.
Nice boy. Shoots in the 80s. Is that why you had me bring up that Chowderhead? I've been watching Harvey all week. He's got this thing sewed up tight. And besides that, there's a small matter of Waldron being guilty.
You don't think any jury in the world would convict a boy that gave the best years of his life to serving his country, do you? I don't care whether he's guilty or not. I've got to win an election. And the only way I can do it is to make Harvey look bad. And you can still sleep nights, huh? As long as there aren't too many people around like you, I can. I'll be around.
Dave, the reporter, and the paper's owner, Wade, exchange wry smiles next Harvey's office.
That's the work, says Stoney. Gun, bullet, statement, confession.
I'm waiting for a couple of blow-ups from the lab, but that's about all.
Okay, let's go over this stuff again now, will it?
Look at that man work. He's out for a record.
Hello, Mac, Paul. That's all, Stoney. We'll take it up there.
What do you do? Live here? He looked as if he just found out there was an income tax.
I'm glad you came in, Mac. There's something I wanted to talk to you about.
Fire away.
It's about that kid over in the jail.
He's a nice fella, Paul. He just worries too much, don't you think?
Absolutely.
No, it's not that. Say, what's the matter with you two?
Shall I tell him, Paul?
Don't be so coy. What is it?
How would you like to be governor?
What?
That's it, Henry. What's the matter? Don't you want it?
Of course I do, but I just...
Everybody in the state will be watching you tomorrow, Henry. And I've been talking to people all over Hartford, New Haven.
He can do it, Henry, and we'll help him.
Governor.
We don't get many good men, many honest men in politics. And when we do, we like to push them.
Thanks, Mac. There's something very important
about this
case. Don't
worry about it tonight. You've got a job to do tomorrow. Come on, Paul, let's go. And for Pete's sake, get some sleep. This place looks like a boar's nest.
Hey, Mac.
Relax, Henry. Take it easy. Let the muscles sag naturally.
Just a minute, Mac.
I'll see you tomorrow after the indictment. Come on. Good night, Governor. I'll take you down to Moriarty's and buy you a steak.
No, no, you say.
The next day, the courtroom is packed for the indictment.
We're pulling for you, Henry.
We're going to prosecute. We have confidence.
The court stands.
You may open court, Mr. Sheriff.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. The Honorable Superior Court within and for the state of Connecticut is now open in session in this place. All persons having cause or action pending therein will give their attendance according to law. Be seated, please.
Harvey steps towards the bald-headed judge, who sits in his black robes on a high-backed chair.
Mr. State's Attorney?
If Your Honor, please, I would like to call to your attention this afternoon the case of the state versus John Waldron. On the 22nd day of October of this year, the accused was bound over to this court by the city court on a charge of murder in the first degree, growing out of the death of the Reverend George A. Lambert, the pastor of the St. Christopher's Protestant Episcopal Church of this city. My assistants have drawn up a chart of the scene of the crime. The facts in the case disclose that on the evening of 29th of September, Father Lambert was taking his usual walk along here.
Well, boys, it started.
How's it going?
Great. Henry's carrying the ball.
And it's not too early for a little celebration, huh?
It's never too early to celebrate.
Back the race.
That's a load off my mind.
Mine too.
Yeah, boys.
The last of the pursuers dropped out, and so the trail of the murderer was lost about here. John Waldron was apprehended 18 days later in Ohio and was returned to this city. Under the circumstances, there was no alternative for Coroner Ryan except to make the finding which he did, holding the accused for the murder of Father Lambert. The coroner, very logically, divided the case into 6 points, which in substance are as follows. First, Waldron was seen by an acquaintance, Miss Irene Nelson, within a block of the place of the shooting, from 5 to 10 minutes before the shooting. Second, the slayer wore a dark coat and a light fedora hat. Third, the witnesses, Mr. Graham Rogers, Mr. Thomas Callahan, and Mr. and Mrs. Paul Lukash, actually saw the shot fired. Fourth, these witnesses, plus Romula Cartucci, Miss Greta Nielsen, and Mr. Eugene Carey, all identified Waldron at police headquarters as the man they had seen fleeing from the scene of the shooting. Fifth, Waldron made a statement in writing, admitting the crime. And sixth, a revolver found on Waldron was a .32 caliber weapon and was the gun from which a bullet found in the head of the deceased was discharged. The function of the city court and the coroner having been discharged in due course, it naturally fell under my jurisdiction for action. The evidence against the accused seemed overwhelming. On its face, at least, it seemed like a well-nigh perfect case, affording little difficulty in the matter of successful prosecution. My own view necessarily was that if the facts above stated were subject to verification, the accused was undoubtedly guilty. But there were sufficient circumstances of an unusual character involved, making it highly important that all the facts be scrutinized with the utmost care and in a most impartial manner. It goes without saying that it is just as important for the state's attorney to use the great powers of his office to protect the innocent as it is to convict the guilty. Your Honor, I have endeavored to approach this case without any preconceived notion. I have personally interrogated all the witnesses. I have examined all the evidence with the utmost care. If Your Honor please, it is my belief that the defendant is innocent, and I intend to enter a plea accordingly.
Waldron looks stunned. Reporters rush out. Jim, the hook-nosed man, sits impassively in the public gallery. The judge stands.
The court will be recessed until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And if there's any recurrence of this outrageous conduct, the courtroom will be cleared by the sheriff and the proceedings will be conducted in private. Mr. State's Attorney, I'll see you in my chambers.
Robbie glares at Harvey before leaving. Jim Hooknose is still in his seat. Harvey turns to the eyewitnesses on the front bench.
No witnesses, that's all you can do.
Hooknose is the last to leave the public gallery, holding his dark coat and light hat. Dave on the phone.
I figured he was working on some angle. Well, he can't, huh? He just did. That's exactly what happened, I'm telling you.
The whole place is going nuts.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll get Harvey, Harvey, and then I'll go after him.
That's right.
Yeah.
How do I know? Well, okay, get a hold of John and tell him, will you?
I know.
Yeah, that's right. There's an awful lot of noise here. I can hardly hear myself.
The judge's chambers.
I've known you a long time, Henry. And I've always respected your ability, but there's something about this that doesn't smell right.
Well, I think I'm within my...
Now, don't tell me about your legal rights. I've been on the bench long enough to know what you can do and what you can't do. You represent the 2 million people of this state in prosecuting a particularly brutal murder. And I'm going to see that their rights are protected. I don't pretend to know your motives in asking for a nulla prosequi. But if they're political, I'll not only take steps to have you disbarred, I'll also do my best to have you prosecuted for malfeasance in office.
It's quite possible that my motives are political. It's also possible that I think the man's innocent.
Mr. Harvey, you'd better do a great deal more than think.
Harvey takes his cue and leaves. Detective White leads Waldron from a side entrance to the court. A small crowd is waiting. They look menacing and move closer to White and his prisoner, who both glance around nervously. White grips the sleeve of Waldron's dark overcoat.
Why don't you turn him loose, Whitey?
Cut it out, fellas. Don't do it. Lay off, do you hear?
We'll take good care of him.
No.
You knew Father Lambert, Whitey.
I can't do it.
You're not going to let him get away with this.
Take your hands off.
Wait a minute, Whitey.
Break it up.
Robbie.
You boys aren't acting very smart.
But we're friends of Father Lambert's. And he's not going to get away with this.
I don't think Lambert would have liked it this way.
Suppose we take him.
Quite a few of us are going to get hurt. Want to be first?
You don't have to get tough about it.
That's rather dumb. Excuse me.
Robbie pushes through the crowd and opens a car door. White bundles Waldron into the back. Another detective gets behind the wheel. Robbie addresses the crowd.
Why don't we all go on home, eh?
Come on, break it up, you hombres. Everybody, let's go. Right, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Come on. Come on. Go ahead, let's go. Graham, hold it. You too, Mike. Get on the way. Go ahead. Hold it. All right. Go ahead. Come on, you too. What do you think? The whole way can't get out of here. Scram. Go ahead.
Harvey to Robbie.
Thought for a minute you're going to have trouble there, Robbie.
Nah, I don't have trouble with that kind. They're easy.
What's the matter, Robbie? You sound bitter.
Bitter? Me? Why should I be bitter? I'm a cop, Mr. Harvey, remember? An honest cop backing up honest men.
Now listen, Robbie.
No, not this time. I'm through listening. We've got our man, and we'll convict him if it takes the next 10 years. I don't care what shenanigans you and the rest of your crowd are trying to pull. Never did like politicians.
Later, the newspaper editor is with Harvey.
Then why didn't you let us in on it? What are you trying to do?
Don't start anything, Mac. I don't want to discuss
it. If Wade's talk with you, maybe
that's the second time today I've been accused of political chicanery, and I'm getting tired of it.
Then what is the story?
There's no story, Mac. Not any angles to it. I just happen to believe the boy's innocent.
Can you prove it?
I don't know. I thought I had the case going perfectly straight, and all of a sudden it comes back and hits me right between the eyes. I just don't know.
Let's think about you for a minute. What are you going to do? Destroy 2 years' work? Throw your career in the ash can?
It's the boy's life, Mac.
If he's innocent. He can't be. You said yourself it was a perfect case. And even if he were, is it worth it? We've cleaned out the city. We've thrown out the crooks and the grafters. We've made this town a decent place to live. Is one man's life worth more than the community?
Yes, Mac, it is.
Good luck, Henry. You'll have to fight the whole town, though.
Looking gloomy, Harvey ponders. He zips up his briefcase and goes home. As he steps wearily into the hallway, his wife rushes over to give him a kiss.
Well, hello, Madge.
Are you all right, dear?
A little worse for wear, but I guess I'll make it.
I held dinner. Paul Harris is in the living room. He said he had to see you.
Oh, no. Now, what does he want? Well, you run along and eat, dear. I'm not particularly hungry anymore.
Now, Henry.
Maybe a sandwich later. I don't know.
Madge takes away his hat, coat, and briefcase. She eyes him as he puts a hand to his face and sighs before going into the living room. The overweight Paul Harris turns to him from an easy chair, gripping a hanky for his perspiration. He looks worried.
Hello, Henry.
Hello, Paul.
Henry, I don't like the way you're handling this case.
You don't?
No. I suppose Mac told you what you're doing with the party. It can't happen, Henry. We've got to win an election.
We do.
Absolutely. And to do it, we need a conviction. You're going to move an indictment for murder, Henry.
I am.
Yes.
I've had a pretty trying day, Paul. I'm going to give you just 1 minute to get out of here. And then I'm going to throw you out.
I think you better sit down until I've finished.
Just don't take any longer than a minute.
I'll see what I can do. You remember our project for a recreational center for children? We're to buy some 10 acres from the Sunset Realty Company for the project.
I'm still not interested.
I'm the Sunset Realty Company, Henry.
What?
I own the Sunset Realty Company. And I've sunk every cent I have into it. If the city doesn't buy that land from me at my price, I'm ruined. And if we don't win this election, the city won't buy.
And you expect me to be a party to this? You're insane.
Harvey crosses to the telephone and starts dialing.
I wouldn't do that if I were you, Henry.
Harris points a gun. Harvey presses down the phone rest.
Paul, you're crazy.
That's the way it is.
Well, I can make this call anytime.
Maybe. But I don't think Madge would like it.
What's she got to do with it?
Nothing much. She's just chairman of the project.
Why, you... She doesn't know anything about this.
No. But she gave me $2,500 to help buy the land. That wouldn't look very good in the papers, Henry. Think it over.
Harvey looks overwhelmed. Madge answers the door. A posse of reporters are outside.
Good evening.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. Mr. Harvey... Well, he's gone to bed. He was very tired.
Oh, give us a break, Mrs. Harvey.
I'm sorry. Good night. Good night.
Well, why don't you wake him up?
The others leave. Dave and the cub reporter remain.
Hold it.
Well, what did I say? Why don't you wake him up?
It's my professional opinion. He's not asleep.
No?
No.
Oh.
That's Paul Harris's car.
You mean he's in...
Don't say it. He's in there.
Oh,
wait for.
Inside the house.
And there's no way for it to get out. Nobody's going to bother to look up the incorporation papers. I could even cut you in for a block. All right, let it go. But I've got to have that indictment. I don't care how you do it. You're the lawyer. But I'll be there to see that you do. Henry, you put me with my back against the wall. I've lived here all my life. I've got my name and my family to think of. I've risked everything I've got on this. If I go under, you're going with me.
Harry storms out of the house. Harvey fingers a book and sighs. He opens the book and reads from the lawyer's code of ethics. The primary duty of a lawyer exercising the office of public prosecutor is not to convict, but to see that justice is done. He closes the book and pushes it over his desk. Harris waddles back to his car, wiping sweat from his face. Dave and Bill confront him.
Hello, Mr. Harris.
What? Hello, Woods.
How about a statement?
Oh, not tonight, Dave. Not tonight.
What'd he say?
Look out. Besides, you're the opposition paper, you know.
Yeah, but how about the case, Mr. Harris?
The case?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Harvey was having a little fun this afternoon. It'll be all right. What'd he say, Dave? What'd he say?
Mr. Harvey was having a little fun this afternoon. Bill, where's your car? I want you to drive me to Hartford.
Hartford? What for?
I know a fella there that makes very good coffee.
Oh, but I got a date, Dave. Rosie's waiting for
me. What
do
you want to be, a reporter or a Romeo?
Well, a reporter, but you know...
Okay, then we'll go to Hartford, and we'll bring Rosie back some hot coffee. Come on.
In the sitting room, Harvey is fingering the book again in deep thought. Madge comes in with milk and a sandwich.
Oh, Madge, you didn't need to do that.
You come on. I suppose I should have let you starve gracefully. Sit down there.
I'm not very hungry.
Here. There's your milk. Just don't sit and look at it. You drink that. Good for you.
She drapes her arms over the back of his chair.
Henry, the reporters were here.
Deviled ham. Do you remember that flat around the corner from law school and those sandwiches from Barney's?
I remember.
It would almost be fun to do it again, wouldn't it?
Well, you're both a little younger, Henry.
Yeah, that's right. Now, did you give Paul some money on that playground deal?
No, I didn't give it to him. He told me they needed extra cash to buy the land, so I loaned that $2,500 that Father... Is that wrong, Henry?
No, it doesn't make any difference.
She switches off an electric lamp.
Darling... Is there going to be any trouble?
Trouble? Don't be silly. And since I can't interest you in a one-room flat, how about the governor's mansion?
She looks startled.
What?
He nods with his arm round her.
Henry, what about this man? Is he innocent?
You didn't answer my question.
You didn't answer mine.
I don't know, Madge. I thought I had something, but I'm just not sure.
I see.
You didn't answer my question.
Oh, you ought to know by now that I'll go anywhere you go, darling. But it's got to be what you want.
It doesn't give me much help.
I didn't intend it to.
She snuggles her head into his chest as he sits on an easy chair.
I'll get you another glass of milk.
She takes away his unfinished glass of milk. He picks up a sandwich and puts it to his mouth, but then throws it back on the plate. It's the resumption of the indictment. Harvey goes over case notes at a table with colleagues. He looks under pressure and puts a hand to his face. The courtroom is full with more pushing to get in. The ushers try to hold them back, but Jim Hooknose struggles through, holding his dark coat and light hat, and manages to get a seat. He stares with his lips slightly open as Detective White brings in Waldron from another entrance. Waldron approaches Harvey. His defense lawyer, O'Shea, pulls him away.
Mr. Harvey,
Waldron, sit down there. I'm your attorney. I'll handle your defense.
Now Wade arrogantly pushes his way into the courtroom.
That's all. That's all.
What do you mean, that's all?
Come on, hey, Mr. Wade.
Come on, Mag.
That's all.
Everybody rise, please.
May open court, Mr. Sheriff.
Oh, yeah. The Honorable Superior Court within and for the State of Connecticut is now open in session in this place. All persons having cause or action pending therein will give their attendance according to law. Be seated, please.
Mr. State's Attorney?
Harvey goes before the judge.
Your Honor, at the close of yesterday's session, I announced that I was going to enter a plea of nolle prosequi in the case of the State versus John Waldron.
You wish to amend that statement, Mr. State's Attorney?
I do, Your Honor. There are so many baffling aspects to this case that I wish to reserve a plea until I've laid some of this evidence before the court.
Very well.
Your Honor, such was the strange nature of this case that I and the gentlemen of my office made a detailed investigation into it. We felt that that would be necessary for any successful prosecution of the case. I realize that it's not in order to call witnesses at this time, but with the court's permission, I would like to interrogate certain persons who were present at the coroner's inquest.
That sounds reasonable.
Thank you. I would like Mr. Graham Rogers to take the stand, please.
Objection!
Mr. O'Shea?
Your Honor, the accused is adequately represented, and I submit that the presentation of this evidence is highly improper.
I regret to inform defense counsel that since this is a preliminary proceeding, the state's attorney is perfectly within his rights. You may proceed, Mr. State's Attorney.
Stand up. Raise your right hand. Do you swear the evidence you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God?
I do.
Your name?
Graham Rogers.
Sit down.
Mr. Rogers, you were looking directly across the street at the murderer at the time the shot was fired?
Yes, sir. I was just closing up my shop.
Your testimony says that you saw the murderer raise his arm, something glittered in his hand, and it was then that the shot was fired.
Yes, sir.
Are you certain that's what you saw?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I don't mean to question your integrity, sir, but I must ask you again, are you certain that it glittered?
Yes, sir, I'm certain. It was shadowy, but there was light enough from the streetlight so I could see it.
That's all, thank you. Your Honor, I'd like to show you this gun. Your Honor will observe that it is of a very dull finish, similar to that used by the Army. The purpose of that being that no reflection on the barrel will reveal the user's position. Your Honor, I submit that a gun specifically designed not to reflect sunlight could hardly glitter at night. It was this inconsistency of testimony, Your Honor, which first struck me. I believe there are others. With the court's permission, I'll just question the next few witnesses in their seats.
Proceed.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the murder which you witnessed took place on a particularly dark night, and the events which followed were both unexpected and swift. Yet you all unhesitatingly identified this man who now faces you. I must ask you again, is this the man? Mr. Rogers?
Yes, sir, I'm sure.
Mrs. Lukacs?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, I don't want to imply that this identification is not in good faith, but it was a particularly dark night, and the basis for the identification seems to be that the murderer wore a dark coat and a light hat. Fairly common combination. Oh, there's one there. There's another. One of our distinguished witnesses has one. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, you wore such a combination this morning yourself, Your Honor. There could be no mistake in your identification.
The witnesses shake their heads.
The identification seems to be unanimous and conclusive, Your Honor. But on the night of October 25th, under approximately the same conditions, I and seven of my assistants re-ran the crime.
A flashback to the reenactment.
We reenacted it not once, but seven times, so that each of us could see it from a different point.
Herb?
Mm.
Phil?
No.
Dan?
Mm.
How about you, Smitty?
Everything all right, Chief? Anything wrong, Chief?
Huh? No. Well, let's try it again, boys. Switch positions.
Your Honor, I have here the sworn statement
of each of my assistants that not once during all the reenactments could any of them definitely state that he recognized the man portraying the murderer, although in each case he knew him well. Are you still certain of your identification, ladies and gentlemen? You, Mrs. Lukacs.
Well, I,
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm certain.
The ex-girlfriend.
Would you take the stand, please, Miss Nelson?
Defense lawyer O'Shea looks increasingly uncomfortable. Waldron whispers to him.
What's he putting her up there for?
What?
If he lets her, they...
Shh!
Well, she's nothing.
All you're going to do is hurt yourself.
Miss Nelson, your testimony states that on the evening of the murder, you stood in the window of the Coney Island Cafe.
Yeah.
And that you could definitely state that the man you saw through the window at 7:20 on the evening of September 29th was the accused John Waldron.
That's what I said.
I may be assuming, but isn't it possible that such an attractive young lady as yourself might have several gentlemen friends?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? And isn't it possible that these friends in passing the restaurant might wave to you through the window? And isn't it also possible, Miss Nelson, that it was not John Waldron, but another of your friends who waved to you through the window that night?
No.
Your Honor, in the course of examining the evidence in this case, I also visited the Coney Island Cafe. And upon her advice, I stood behind the counter in the exact spot where Miss Nelson states that she saw John Waldron on the evening of September 29th. From this point, the window of the cafe is obscured to a point of 4.5 to 5 feet by steam. It is possible, however, to see dimly through the window. But one of my men passed the window while I watched, and although I know this man well, it was impossible for me to recognize him. Miss Nelson, did you know that rewards for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the murderer total $8,000?
I did not.
Your application for the reward is already on file. Miss Nelson, before you answer me, please remember that not only is a man's life in jeopardy, but that you might be sent to prison for perjury. Now, was it Waldron you saw through that window? Was this the man?
Well, I'm not absolutely sure.
Thank you, Miss Nelson. That's all. I would like Miss Catherine Mannion to come to the stand, please.
A man sitting next to Miss Mannion gives her a nudge. The woman gets to her feet to take the stand. Jim Hooknose looks nervous. Wade leans into his editor.
What's Harvey trying to do?
What? What's he doing? Giving O'Shea a lesson in trial procedure.
Catherine Mannion.
Miss Mannion, you are an employee of the Plaza Theater?
Yes, sir.
And in your capacity as cashier, you naturally pride yourself on your memory for faces?
Yes, sir, I do.
And you can definitely state that the accused John Waldron did not enter your theater on the night of September 29th.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Miss Mannion, this is my assistant, Mr. Stone.
How do you do?
Was he in your theater on Tuesday night of last week?
Oh, no, sir.
Your Honor, at 8:13 on Tuesday night of last week, observed by two reliable witnesses and myself, Mr. Stone bought a ticket to the Plaza Theater from Miss Mannion.
Well, I...
We're all human, Miss Mannion. That's all. Thank you. Your Honor, I think we can state at this point that the evidence of the eyewitness is subject to question.
Very interesting, but scarcely conclusive.
Oh, I agree with the court. If I have shown that the witnesses might have been mistaken, they might as easily have been correct. But as I've stated, Your Honor, there are certain aspects of this case which are confusing. Do I have the court's permission to continue?
Proceed.
Thank you. I would like Dr. William Rainsford to take the stand, please.
As the psychiatrist gets to his feet, Dave comes into court and makes a place for himself in the press bench.
Dr. William Rainsford?
Where you been, Dave? Overslept. What's the score?
Dr. Rainsford, I realize that you were retained by the police department to examine John Waldron and have therefore already formed an opinion of him. But as a physician and psychiatrist, you will admit that in a state of exhaustion approaching hysteria, a man is highly susceptible to suggestion.
Certainly, though I have some doubt as to its application to the accused.
I didn't ask you that, Doctor. I asked you for your professional opinion.
In that event, I should have to answer yes.
That's all, Doctor. Thank you. I would like Chief Robinson to take the stand, please.
Harvey glances down at a document entitled Interrogation of John Waldron.
Raise your right hand. You swear that the evidence you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, shall be God. Your name, please.
Harold F. Robinson.
Sit down.
Chief Robinson, you were present during the entire questioning of John Waldron, and you state that nothing was done to force a confession from the accused.
He confessed of his own free will. There was no physical violence.
But you did implant the idea in his mind.
He confessed himself.
Yet at 11:55 a.m., after hours of questioning, Dr. Rainsford said to the accused, "You made him the personification of every handout, every word of advice, and in a rage, you shot him." Is that correct?
Yes, but...
That's all, Chief.
That's not all!
You're excused, sir.
Thank you. Your Honor, while I feel that the validity of the defendant's confession may be challenged, I'm forced to admit that it, too, falls in the category of the inconclusive. Both the testimony of the eyewitnesses and the confession itself would be subject to long argument at a trial. And there are even more concrete pieces of evidence in this case than we have already examined. Your Honor, this is the bullet taken from the head of the deceased. The police ballistics expert has already stated that it came from the gun found on the person of John Waldron. My office has been extremely interested in this bullet, and with the permission of the police department, we have conducted experiments with the bullet and with the accused's gun. Now, it's not my intention to go into the technicalities of ballistics or call in experts to testify. However, five independent ballistics experts have been retained by my office to make tests in this case. And with the court's permission, I would like to briefly summarize their findings.
Proceed.
Your Honor, in photograph A is the bullet which I hold in my hand. This picture labeled B is that of a bullet fired from the gun of John Waldron. I won't pretend that I can discuss lands and grooves with the authority of an expert, but to the untutored eye, even to the eye of an expert, these two bullets would seem identical. There is one minor difference, however. When this bullet was removed from the head of the deceased, a small particle was left in the brain. Our police force didn't feel that it was important to remove that particle for their ballistics test. But, Your Honor, that particle was highly important to the ballistics experts retained by my office. They all agreed that the two bullets were remarkably similar. But I have here their sworn statements that the two bullets could not have been fired from the same gun.
Harris sits tight-lipped and uncomfortable. Jim Hooknose looks alarmed and uneasy.
Order! Order in the court!
However, I'm forced to admit that this, too, falls in the category of the inconclusive. If Mr. Johnston, the police expert, still insists that these two bullets were fired from the same gun, the odds are 5-1 against him that they were not. However, the odds are still present. Your Honor, this is the gun that was taken from the person of John Waldron on the night of his capture. Would Your Honor kindly examine it, please? The gun is a .32 caliber weapon. And these are the bullets that go with it. There are six bullets. Would Your Honor kindly examine them also?
The judge empties the bullets from their container.
And now insert them in the gun.
The judge loads the bullets into the gun. Harris has received a note from Dave. How about cutting me in on Sunset Realty? Harris shifts uncomfortably.
And now may I have it, please?
With a face of granite, the judge hands Harvey the loaded weapon.
Mr. Harvey, that's a loaded gun.
I'll be extremely careful, Your Honor. Mr. Whitney, please. In the reenactment of the murder, we found, through the examination of the trajectory of the bullet, that the murderer had to hold the gun in exactly this position when the shot was fired. Through examination of the powder burns, we found that Father Lambert must have been within 6 inches of the gun, or about here.
Harvey positions himself with his back to the gun.
Henry!
Mr. Whitney,
Will you fire the gun?
Good.
I must apologize, Your Honor, for the use of theatrics in this presentation. But there's a defect in the firing pin of this gun. It's loose and faulty, making it impossible for the gun to be fired in this position. We tried it 16 times. That was the 17th.
Harvey takes out his hanky to wipe his brow. Paul Harris falls down with a gun in his hand. He shot himself. Dave quickly takes the note he wrote from the other hand.
Let him alone. Stand up there. Get back there, please.
It's always the same. If you look around long enough, you'll find some guy with his fingers in the till. I went to Hartford last night.
Why?
I met Harris after he left your house. He said you were switching. I didn't think you were that kind of a guy.
Having handed Harvey the note, Dave grins at him. Jim Hooknose looks shifty as he rushes down the courtroom stairs as Wade lectures his editor.
MacDonald, I just made one mistake. I should have known by now that there's one thing you can't beat in politics, and that's a completely honest man. Well, I wonder how Florida will be for the winter.
I'm afraid people get just as tired of reform as they do of anything else. You'll be back.
I know.
You'll be back.
You don't look very happy, Henry.
I was just thinking of Paul.
Yes. Paul. Well, Paul more or less passed judgment on himself.
I suppose so.
Robbie.
Mr. Harvey, that was a good presentation. Very good. I called you a politician yesterday. I was wrong.
Forget it, Robbie. I know how you felt.
Robbie self-consciously moves off.
I'll bet that stubborn old goat still doesn't believe he's innocent.
It may take him a little time. After all, it took him a long time to decide he was guilty. That's why I like him.
Oh, I like him too, but he's still a stubborn old goat.
Waldron.
Harvey places his arm over Waldron's shoulder.
Well, what are you going to do now?
I don't know. I'll get something going. It's about time, don't you think? Mr. Harvey, I don't know how to thank you.
Don't try. Well?
The two men shake hands. Next day, the newspaper headline says, Waldron freed. Harvey exonerates murder suspect. A cop quizzes Dave.
No kidding, Dave. How did you peg that corporation?
I never reveal my methods.
What's that? Don't you ever read anything but your own stuff? The guy was killed in the crack-up. Screwiest thing you ever saw. One of our boys got on his tail for speeding. Chased him for a mile or so, and all of a sudden, the guy swerved, and that was that.
It's Hooknose.
This case was never solved, and within 24 hours, John Waldron was once again a free man. The case is still open on the police books of a Connecticut city, and it may interest you to know that there are those who still believe the accused man was guilty. It may interest you, too, to know that the man we have depicted for you as State's Attorney Harvey was actually a Connecticut lawyer named Homer Cummings. He did not become governor of the state. He rose instead to one of the highest legal positions in the land, Attorney General of the United States.
The end.